I'm gonna have a hell of a time editing that. You know that, right?
At some point, you just leave it.
Yeah.
When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Collected Edition, a comic book podcast where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, is Brian Reese.
Hey, Paul. How's it going?
It's going well. Can't
Excellent.
Complain.
Good to hear. How's your bracket?
I did not fill out a bracket. I'm bracketless.
You didn't fill out a bracket?
I did not fill out a bracket.
Well, sad.
Or, you know, college ball just has never been a thing for me. It's madness.
It is madness. We got Loyola. Now, if Loyola wins out, I shouldn't say that because by the time this posts, this will all be over. So,
and they just lost. All right. Well, today on the program, we'll be discussing not just an arc, but the arc of the New Mutants, the Demon Bear Saga, written by Chris Claremont with art by Bill Sienkiewicz. But first, Brian.
Paul.
Recently, set photos have been revealed of the costume of Shazam. Have you seen that?
Captain Marvel?
Who?
Captain Marvel?
Captain Marvel's a girl now.
What?
No. A woman.
Isn't Captain Marvel Shazam?
Incorrect.
What?
Well, that's interesting right there. We could just talk about the crazy publication history of Captain Marvel and how DC really screwed up that one.
Wasn't Captain Marvel Carol Danvers?
I thought Carol Danvers was Supergirl.
Wait, Supergirl is Shazam?
Yes, Supergirl is Shazam. As we all know, Captain Marvel was a character in... Oh, who was the publisher? It wasn't Charleston.
Fawcett.
It was Fawcett. And was sued by DC for being too Superman-like. So they eventually lost the rights. Or went out of business and DC bought the rights to Captain Marvel.
Oh, something. It's a little convoluted.
It's a little convoluted.
You're on the right path. Without us pulling up the Wikipedia, you're on the right path.
Yeah. But eventually, DC let the copyright or the trademark to Captain Marvel lapse. Marvel swooped in and bought the rights to it and created their unique character, Mar-Vell. Yeah. The original Captain Marvel is a Kree named Mar-Vell, and he's Captain Mar-Vell. And then, of
which
course,
sounded suspiciously like Marvel Comics.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can't blame Marvel Comics for wanting the rights to someone named Captain Marvel.
Sure.
You know, I mean, if there was somebody named Captain Detective Comics, DC would want DC would want the rights to that.
I would now like to read a comic book called Captain Detective Comics.
Well, General Detective Comics. How about that? But yeah, so, and then, you know, then we can get into the whole slew of, we have to have a female version of each one of our characters for copyright reasons. That's why we have a She-Hulk and Ms. Marvel.
Right.
And yeah, and all the...
But eventually DC lost the rights to Captain Marvel as a name.
Right.
Which was a little convoluted. We didn't plan for this, so I don't think any of us really went into our homework.
Yeah, this is just completely off the cuff.
On the history of... So, you know, our readers could certainly correct any of our inconsistencies. But eventually, you know, there was some confusion, though, because there was a Captain Marvel. He was referred to Captain Marvel not too long ago. But anyway, now he's Shazam.
Yeah, he's Shazam just for, you know...
Straight up Shazam.
Yeah, just to avoid complication.
And he is not Shaquille O'Neal.
No. That's Kazam.
Right.
Yeah. we're off the rails even more than usual today. Okay.
Paul, let's talk about Shazam's costume.
Yeah. It's very comic book accurate.
And the picture, yes.
Yeah. I think that's great. The reason being, is that, you know, the original conception of Shazam, Billy Batson, is a little kid who becomes a superhero, and it's what a little kid thinks a superhero should look like. You know, and it's his conception. It's a kid's conception of what a superhero should look like. And right. Of course it's going to be, you know, goofy and brightly colored with lightning bolt and that silly ass cape, like half cape over his shoulder.
I like the cape.
I do too. I love the fact that it's what it's supposed to be. And that gives me hope that this is not going to be, you know, the grim, dark DC universe as it is now. And it's going to be bright and colorful and fun, which is what Shazam should be, is bright and colorful and fun.
Right. Yeah. And it's a different director. It's not Zack Snyder.
Yeah, I know. But even Patty Jenkins, and I loved Wonder Woman. I think Wonder Woman's great.
Yeah.
It still has that, you know, blue filtered darkness to it. At least when they get to the main bulk of the... Now I'm going to backtrack what I just said. The beginning of it in Themyscira, it's actually bright and colorful and wonderful.
Right. Anyway, well,
DC has the best, brightest, goofiest characters, and I mean that in the best possible way.
Sure. Yes.
And I'd love to see them just go with that.
You know? Right. It was Marvel that, you know, sort of did the sort of you know, the street level, the real life sort of darker sort right. of feat.
Tie it into to real life problems, that sort
right.
of thing.
Right. And you know, DC always had DC was goofy for a long time, and you know, it wasn't until, which we've covered ad nauseum, you know, the Alan Moore and Frank Miller's coming in and what have you. But it seems like DC is certainly in their films embrace the grimdark.
Yeah. Even the Nolan films have gone that direction.
Right. And,
you know, I'd love to just see, you don't have to go completely camp. Like, you know, the old Christopher Reeve Superman, that's very camp.
Yes.
You know, but you can do that without being silly.
Yeah.
You know, and I should clear, you know what? Someone brought this up to me on Twitter once. In a previous episode, I said, I all I want is a really good Superman movie.
And hey, good luck.
Yeah, well, and then, of course, there were some people offended by the fact that the Christopher Reeve films 1 and 2 are considered great Superman movies. I like those. I have a lot of fun with them.
But I don't know if they're great. You know, it's heresy. It's heresy to pick on the Christopher Reeve Superman for reasons.
Yeah. But, I think Christopher Reeve is great. I love him in the role, and I mean, I could talk to you all about my favorite parts of those films. But I want to see, you know, I want to see like a serious take on Superman that still retains its, you know, its whimsy.
Well, and I think Shazam might be the one to do that because he is a Superman avatar, as it were. But again, like you said, it's the Superman as viewed by a kid.
Yeah, it's what a kid thinks a superhero should be. And I think that right there is just a great concept, if they embrace that, and if that's what this movie's going to be, oh man, I think that'll be fantastic.
Well, I don't know if you read, this was years ago. It feels like it was just a few years ago, but I think it was much longer ago than that. Jeff Smith of Bone, the creator, writer, artist on Bone, did a 4-issue sort of prestige Shazam comic. Did you know about that? Have you read that?
No, I have not.
That might be a fun thing to recommend down the line. But that was very much, you know, if you've read Bone, you know Jeff Smith's.
Yeah, I do. I'm trying to think how that would play with Shazam.
Well, I mean, it was, he wasn't writing it like he was writing Bone.
Okay.
he was writing it as a DC property, but it's been a long time since I read it, but I remember it being quite entertaining. Sort of having that sort of more innocent take.
Yeah, and see, that would be wonderful. You don't have to go the role. Do you remember the old 70s Captain Marvel series?
TV
the
series? Yes, TV with series? ISIS, too.
Yes! And I believe Sasquatch showed up
a few times. Not the terrorist organization. No. But the foxy Egyptian goddess.
Yes, and Sasquatch showed up every once in a while.
Yes.
Yeah, we don't have to go in that direction. But... could have a little bit more mature than that. Was that Sidney
Well, and to your, you know, to your desire for, you know, Ava DuVernay is going to be directing a New Gods movie.
I saw that.
Apologies for mispronunciation there.
Yeah, all I've heard is that there's going to be a New Gods movie. I have no idea what it's going to cover or what the story arc is going to be. Is it going to be more Kirby-esque, or is it going to be, do you know anything more than
bold, bright, and crazy?
I hope so too, because that
you got to do that with New Gods. I mean, I know Mr. Miracle is taking kind of a darker turn with them right now, but
there's still a lot of really funny stuff, even though it is kind of dark and it's, you know, it's basically an analogy for depression.
Yeah.
But there is some really funny stuff in there as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so Tom King is kind of embracing the sillier elements of these characters, while at the same time, now we're going to talk about Mr. Miracle. Boy, we are not on track.
Or we could save Mr. Miracle till it's done.
Yes, I think we should. That's been one of my favorite ongoing series that's been happening right now.
We should save Mr. Miracle.
We're going to save Mr. Miracle. I hope Tom King saves Mr. Miracle by the end of the run.
Well, you know, I got a little Baba coming, so.
Yeah, a little Barda.
A little Barda.
Okay.
A little miracle.
a little miracle. Can't keep him in his crib, the little escape artist.
Please note that spoilers.
Yes, if you're not reading Mr. Miracle.
All the spoiler warnings will come after the spoiler from now on.
But anyway, we should probably focus. The Shazam thing. I'm really hoping, like I said, you know, the big colorful craziness. I really hope DC in the future for its movies embraces that more, because a Green Lantern film could be amazing if they embraced the inherent goofiness of the subject.
Right. It's sort of like Guardians of the Galaxy did a little bit.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
But they shouldn't try to copy Guardians of the Galaxy.
No. They should try to make their own thing that
right.
is not starring Ryan Reynolds.
Although probably not Ryan Reynolds' fault, ultimately.
No. Have you seen the new Deadpool
movie? He's a fine young man.
Yeah, the new Deadpool movie. There is one thing in that Deadpool trailer that came out. Shatterstar is standing in the back in one scene.
Okay.
Do you know who Shatterstar is?
I know who Shatterstar is.
Comic book accurate. Speaking of comic book accurate costumes, he's got the little, you know, wrestling pad headset on.
Oh, jeez.
I know. So that should be very interesting to see.
Well, you know, it's...
What is Shatterstar's powers, anyway?
I don't know.
He has the ability to hold two swords.
It's the Rob Liefeld era, you know. Does Shatterstar have a big pouch?
I think so. I think he has two bandolier pouches.
Does he have feet?
Well, no. Of course not. No, but he's got...
That is the era when I just marched right the heck away from X-Men. I was like, no, not doing this.
Yeah, I wasn't... I wasn't doing that era either. However, the era immediately preceding that was pretty special. And we'll talk about that right after the break.
Bum, bum, bum.
Hey, segue.
Adventures into the unknown.
Tales from the crypt.
Skeleton Hand.
The haunt of fear.
The vault of horror.
Adventures into terror.
Strange Tales.
Uncanny Tales.
Journey into Mystery.
The House of Secrets.
The House of Mystery.
The Phantom Stranger.
Doctor 13.
Doorway to Nightmare.
The Witching Hour.
Strange Suspense Stories.
Worlds of Fear.
Chamber of Chills.
Terror Tales.
The Beyond.
Tomb of Terror.
Weird War Tales.
The Twilight Zone.
Creepy.
Dark Shadows.
Vampirella.
The Haunted Tank.
The Heap.
Eerie.
Swamp Thing.
Weird Mysteries.
Tomb of Dracula.
Tales of the Unexpected.
Werewolf by Night.
The Demon.
Man Thing.
Monster of Frankenstein.
Brother Voodoo.
The Son of Satan.
Night Force.
The Living Mummy.
The Sandman.
Tomb of Darkness.
Evil Ernie.
Saga of the Swamp Thing.
Flinch.
Hellblazer.
30 Days of Night.
Preacher.
The Walking Dead.
What do these titles have in common? All of them. From Adventures into the Unknown, to Tales from the Crypt, to the House of Mystery, to the Tomb of Dracula, may be found in the Long Box of Darkness. I'm your host, Herman Lowe. Join me every Monday night for a journey into comic book horror as we delve into the secrets of the Long Box of Darkness.
So listen if you dare, puny mortals, to the Long Box of Darkness, available on Stitcher, iTunes, and Podbean. And check out the blog at www.longboxofdarkness.com. Good night, and pleasant screams.
And we're back.
We are back. And today we are going to be discussing a comic book run that I believe Mr. Paul Carr has recommended. Paul, what is your recommendation for today?
Today on the program, we're going to be discussing the Demon Bear Saga from the New Mutants, written by Chris Claremont and with art by Bill Sienkiewicz. This covers basically three issues, 18 to 20 of New Mutants. Now, in the 1980s, under writer Chris Claremont, the X-Men became the most popular title of its day, not only outselling almost every other title at Marvel, but also its rival at DC. So unsurprisingly, Marvel decided to do a spin-off series, starting a trend that in no way would spiral out of control in the future.
Oh no, not at all.
The new title was called New Mutants, and would focus on a team of mutants that were younger, and the stories would deal with them coming to terms with their own powers and dealing with the trials of growing up. The new title was really hit or miss in the beginning, until issue 18, when Bill Sienkiewicz came on, replacing Sal Buscema as artist. And he started his tenure with a nifty little thing called the Demon Bear Saga. Although it's only a three-issue arc, the Demon Bear Saga became the seminal story in New Mutants history, and probably the one that is most remembered by the general reading public today. The story centers on the characters of Cannonball, Samuel Guthrie, who is nigh invulnerable when he blastin', Mirage, Daniel Moonstar, who can create visual, empathic, three-dimensional illusions. Sunspot, Roberta DaCosta, who can store solar energy in his body. Wolfsbane, Rain Sinclair, who's basically a werewolf. Magic, Ileana Rasputin, sister of Colossus, and a mystic who can teleport through limbo to any point on Earth. And Magma, Amara Aquila, who can control lava and hails from a secret ancient Roman society hidden in the Amazon. Comic books, ladies and gentlemen, comic books. The Demon Bear Saga is essentially the culmination of the origin story for Daniel Moonstar. Danny has been having horrifying visions of a demonic bear killing her parents. When her parents do disappear on a hiking trip, she feels guilty, believing her abilities to manifest psychic phenomena caused their deaths. So Danny, wearing war paint, armed only with bow and arrow, walks into the winter night to face the Demon Bear. Despite fighting valiantly, Danny is no match for the Demon Bear, and her broken, bloody body is found in the snow. Danny is taken to an emergency room, where she lay in a coma while the rest of the New Mutants try to figure out what to do. Tension builds as the team realizes that the Demon Bear will strike again. And when it does, something beyond reason happens, as they're all pulled into the surreal world of the Demon Bear, where reality falls apart. And the battle will be lost if the New Mutants can't learn to fight together as a team. This short arc has been massively influential in the genre, both in art and storytelling. It highlights what can be done when a perfect, sympathetic relationship between artist and writer is achieved. It goes beyond normal comic book stories, beyond the typical superhero tale, and approaches something that could be called transcendent. Brian, what did you think of this story?
Wow, I don't know if I have anything to add after all of this. No, it was a treat going back and reading this. It had been a long time since I had visited or revisited the New Mutants, and of course. As you so previously stated, as a sort of important arc, both for the New Mutants and in the X universe and in comics in general, this one certainly is one of the highlights. And I believe we were probably going to have a long discussion on Sienkiewicz.
Yes.
So I don't need to add anything about his art here at the outset, but I do feel that. I think this story, while a great story, would not have been near as great without Sienkiewicz's art.
Yes, and that can actually be, you can see that for the previous episode, in issue 17, Sal Buscema is still doing the artwork, and that's the, you know, he does a dream sequence where the demon bear is manifested, and it's very delicate. You know, it's Sal Buscema is a great artist, and it looks fine, but it's very dreamlike, whereas Sienkiewicz makes it a nightmare.
It's a complete nightmare.
Yeah, and that adds so much to how this story comes across and how it is perceived. Normally, I think we typically when we're discussing a story, we deal with the writing first or how the story is plotted. But in this one, I think it's all about the art.
Yeah, it's not that Claremont's script is bad. It's not bad. And
I actually think it's quite good.
It's good, but it does it plays on some very familiar tropes, like in horror. And which is interesting in of itself that that Claremont was going the horror direction in this arc with the New Mutants, because Claremont was not known necessarily as a horror writer.
Oh no, but some of his I just said we're going to start with the art. We're doing the writing. some of his first of all, it's three issues. It could very well be. The amount of story that's told in these three issues, you know, if it were a modern comic, this would be a year long.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right. It would be stretched out. There is a lot that happens in these three issues. And yeah. I believe it was technically we read four issues.
Yes. There is a fourth issue, which is sort of an epilogue of sorts, you know,
but
sort
kind of them all coming in terms of important in terms of the character introduced.
Yes, it definitely. I wanted to get to that. Eventually. But the Demon Bear arc itself, saga itself, is just the three issues. And then there's a Slumber Party, which is sort of a standalone story that's sort of an unwinding. And it is important because in these three issues, we see the kids, but they seem very grown up. They're put into a situation that is, it's a wonderful little setup that Claremont comes up with, because he has these kids, one of which is in a hospital. That hospital is now cut off from the outside world because of a blizzard. And then they're being attacked by this, you know, demonic spirit.
And I appreciate that theme. I mean, again, the concept of a group of people trapped in a building.
Yeah.
Like, based on their siege, basically. Being, you know, beset by a demonic force or some sort of evil. And it's a trope that plays well and can be used over and over and over again. And I think Claremont, I sounded like I was more negative about it than I was, because I actually really enjoyed it and I thought he did a good job with it. But because it is a trope that he uses well, and I think it fits the characters, because I think where you're headed a little bit is sort of the character development and the development of their powers and the development of them as a team. It's a perfect setting for them.
It is. And it allows them to be, because they are kids. They're all supposed to be teenagers. And, you know, put in this situation, they're all forced to be, to act a lot older than they are, you know.
Well, they're forced to challenge themselves beyond their experiences.
Exactly. So that's why I wanted to read the fourth issue, Slumber Party, right after this, because it allows them, it shows them being kids again.
Right.
And it's a nice little, it's a nice little contrast.
It's a nice coda, yeah.
Yeah. But it's something, to get back to the art, the very first page.
The blanket
turning into the bear.
Yeah,
that is such a striking image, and so the first page, you open it up and you say, "This is different.
Right.
This is not going to be what I normally read."
And a tremendous introduction, like that's you getting introduced to Sienkiewicz right out the bat, and that's being introduced to Sienkiewicz at his best right out the bat. I mean, people read Moon Knight, had a sense of it, but even in Moon Knight, he wasn't doing in Moon Knight what he was doing, what he did in that very first page of New Mutants.
Well, the whole thing. I mean, when you see the Demon Bear for the first time, it's overwhelming. There's no real form to it. It's just sort of this
not defined.
Yeah. It's an undefined horror. And it's amazing. It truly gives you the impact, because Danny Moonstar is so tiny in comparison to this thing. And it gives you that overwhelming sense of horror, of disorientation, of
hopelessness,
that there's no way that she can get through this. And even in that first battle, it looks like she's getting the upper hand, but it's all an illusion.
She never did. Yeah.
And then that image of Danny Moonstar lying bloody in the snow. And that's how the issue ends. I mean, that's the new artist on a fairly new title, and that's how he ends his first issue.
Yeah,
that image. Wow.
And this is remember, this is when comics were still being aimed at kids.
Yeah, yeah. And this
this is general, you know, newsstand comic stuff aimed at kids, and this is dark, dark, dark stuff.
You can see, you know, it's hard to. Hard to overstate how different and unique this was. There was nothing else that looked anything like it.
No.
You know, I still, to this day, there's nothing that looks like it. You know, except other Sienkiewicz stuff. But Sienkiewicz's artwork is so, it's impressionistic. It's, you know, it has that Ralph Steadman kind of feel. Other people. Well,
which I believe was an influence.
But it's very much himself, very unique. And it's not just, yes, the demon bear stuff is insane. And, right. and he does that just so beautifully with splotches of ink and paint. That's incredible. But even his normal stuff, you know, just them sitting in the waiting room in the hospital is filled with, there's a unique, the way his expressions are, it's very unique. It's very expressive.
Well, he like you said, he goes from, you know, sort of the kind of wild, crazy images into very intimate images. And his intimate images are, like you said, the expressions, like he goes, it's almost realistic.
Yes.
Like he veers wildly. And this is what's always been great about Sienkiewicz, is he veers wildly between sort of the impressionistic versus the realistic.
And the juxtaposition of those two things makes, you know, the normal seems off.
Right.
It's very normal. It looks incredibly normal, but there's something not right about it. But then when you put that with the, you know, the crazy surreal stuff, there's something naturalistic about the unreality.
Right. In some ways it's almost there's a little Dali in there as well.
Oh yeah. And you can see, I mean, the influence on this, I mean, Vertigo owes so much of a debt to this storytelling and this kind of art. I mean, you can see the influences in Sandman and The Invisibles. And
certainly the storytelling. I would say more on the covers than on the interiors.
Well, no, I mean, just even the panel layouts. You can see the way Sienkiewicz lays out a page is incredibly unique. And even if it's just a standard 6-panel layout, his color kind of bleeds over the edges.
Right.
And into the margins.
It's not contained. There's no containment in his art unless he specifically tightens it up into a focus.
But then it has to be done for a reason.
Right. Well, and you see this throughout the entire, and his run on New Mutants was short, which is unfortunate. Although I think at the time there was probably, his artwork certainly did not please everybody. And there was definite complaints about his artwork in the New Mutants, which I wonder if those people feel silly now or if they still, you know, look at Sal Buscema as like the,
well, he was very safe, and I want to say again, Buscema's a great artist, but he's normal, and Sienkiewicz is not
right.
Normal.
Yeah.
There's really, I should put it up on our website, just of Buscema's rendition of the demon bear, which is like a face in a cloud, and then what Sienkiewicz does with the demon bear, and it's night and day just doesn't even compare to it.
Even his action, the thing about Sienkiewicz also is his action sequences are not static either.
Right.
Which, you know, we're talking about like a lot of his images and stuff, but even his action sequences, even the sequence, you know, the panels that require like the suggestion of movement or what have you, he does it in such a unique way, but you can feel the movement. So he's not even limited to the quirky art as just quirky art for its own sake. It works in terms of movement, and it works in terms of, like we said, expression, what have you, as well.
Yeah, like even in the beginning, they do the very typical X-Men danger room cold open,
right?
Or, you know, where they try to fool you into two heroes are fighting each other. Oh no, it's just the danger room. Yes. But even
which you
that,
think we would have all learned our lesson by now.
Yeah, and pretty much every X-Men comic opens that way. But even that, the traditional superhero stuff is unique and dynamic and just something, you know, there's just something different about just, yeah, like I think you said it perfectly, just the movement of the characters and how they appear in three-dimensional space. Yeah, I mean,
I think we could all agree. Yeah, I think we could all agree that Sienkiewicz is like one of the great masters of the of comic book art, and he hasn't done a ton.
No,
really,
no. But what he has done is outstanding. And I have to say, issue 20 is called Badlands, and it's sort of the culmination of the entire story arc, cover to cover. That is one of the most batshit insane issues in a comic book I have ever seen. It's amazing. Basically, the New Mutants get pulled into Demon Bear's world, and it's this crazy, surrealistic, wild, you know, Hunter S. Thompson dream sequence.
Yeah.
When I say Hunter S. Thompson, I'm thinking Ralph Steadman and someone taking a lot of drugs. But it's truly amazing. But there's a focus.
Now, kids, no drugs were involved in the making of New Mutants.
That I know of.
That we know of.
But even in the outrageous, outlandish visuals that are happening, there's still a focus and a structure to it. So you're not basically you're not losing focus in the crazy visuals. The story is still being told.
Well, I think that's helped by the fact that you have a very unique artist, but the writer, Chris Claremont, is a traditionalist as a writer. So you have sort of a very traditional script. And by traditional, I don't mean thematically. I just mean in terms of you know, point A to point B.
Right.
Which sort of holds in the Sienkiewicz crazy.
It does. It demands that
things have to go somewhere. They can't just, you can't just be like lingering in sort of a negative space of great art. It does have to move in a direction, and it's Claremont's writing that helps keep that in focus.
Yes, I agree. They work so well together because you have Sienkiewicz's, you know, dreamlike, nightmare-like artistic style, but then you also have this flowery purple prose coming out of Claremont that just sort of just seems to fit so well together. Really, I mean, when you think of great pairings, artists and writers, this is right up there of some of the best.
But it shouldn't have been.
And it shouldn't have been. I mean,
this should not have been good.
No, putting Sienkiewicz on this title was, who came up, was it Shooter who came up with that? Jim Shooter?
I think it was Shooter that basically imposed him. I think that there was resistance.
Wow. I mean, it shouldn't, yeah, like you said, it shouldn't work.
Yeah, there was resistance, I think, even by Claremont to this change. And I'm not, some of this is apocryphal, so we've all got the interwebs to, like, you know, search out these rumors, but
yeah, if it's on the internet, it has to be true, right?
It must be true if it's on the internet. But I think that, you know, it was an uneasy pairing, and I'm not sure if Claremont was always thrilled.
Well, I think he is now.
I'm sure, like, the royalty checks.
Well, no, I mean, you can go back. It's obviously unique.
Claremont doesn't have to worry about royalty checks. Marvel is actually paying him not to write comic books.
I am unaware of this.
But that's not germane to our discussion.
I can't speak on it because I don't know. I don't know any of the details, which usually doesn't stop me from talking about things. Okay, so that was a lot of praise and gushing over stuff. There's one problem that I have with this story, and it comes right at the very end. Where the nurse and the cop who get pulled into the into the demon bear, they get swallowed by the demon bear, and then when they come out, they've suddenly been turned into Native Americans, and they weren't before. Now I'm so okay. Here's my issue. I'm very confused by this. Is it racist? Because I can't tell. I honestly can't tell.
Well,
it's odd. It's a very I don't understand the decision to do that.
So what happens? What happens is that the cop and the nurse are absorbed, or their souls are stolen, right, by the demon bear earlier on in the story arc, and they're used then in the third issue of the arc as antagonists. The demon bear has turned them into Native Americans. In his dream world, they are sort of like a Native American warriors that the demon bear is using to attack the New Mutants, right? And so when they even try to explain this, so when the demon bear is defeated, they're not killed, they return to life, or they return to the real world, only now they're not, you know, Caucasians.
Exactly. They're not Caucasians anymore. They're now Native Americans.
They're, you know, and it was, I believe they tried, it was even tried to be explained that they could not return because their souls had been, there's an explanation for why it happened. The explanation is not good. It's not well done. It's not a great explanation. It's basically foisting off like, oh yeah, they're Native American now.
Yeah. And it's, and the thing is, it doesn't help the story in any way. I mean,
yeah,
the story isn't, if there's just not some grand point that's being made by this. It's just sort of a throw off thing that happens.
It's a bizarre, it's a strange moment again, because there doesn't seem to be a point to keeping them as Native Americans. I mean,
but yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me. And I just think about them going home and like, hi, Ma. Yeah, I'm a Native American now. How does that work exactly?
Right. I mean, and you know, cultural appropriation was not being discussed at the time in the way that it is now, and in the way that we recognize it being done now. So, you know, it existed, yeah. And people were aware of it, usually those whose culture was being appropriated, but it wasn't part of a broader dialogue outside of.
No, but if you, I'm not sure how familiar you are with this run of the New Mutants. For the most part, got to remember this is, you know, early mid 80s. For the most part, it's very, very good with diversity and being culturally sensitive.
Right.
Claremont did a very good job with that.
Chris Claremont alone, I mean, the New Mutants were stand-ins for other social issues.
Right. Yeah, so that's why this makes it all the more head-scratching when you say, because it's so good with other things.
And it seems so tossed off.
Right.
It just seemed to be done for no apparent reason. And it's weird. I hesitate to run around, you know, I hesitate to outright say that this was ignorant, or I don't think it was intentionally racist, which doesn't make it not, you know, intention or not is.
Well, that's what I get to my question at the top. Is it racist or is it just stupid?
And both are similar. And
yes, you can actually argue that racism is stupid. So
I think it's weirder. There's part of me that thinks it's weirder, and people can correct us on this. And you know, there are good cases to be made, and intelligent cases to be made for a variety of sort of reactions to this particular part of it. You know, I do not think it was intentional, but I think that the carelessness of it is troubling.
But that's only one. You know, it's actually almost throwaway at the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you blink and you miss it. But if you go back to earlier in that issue 20, and it's the common trope, you see it all the time in comic books and in movies, which is the heroes, they can't get along. They're all trying to work for their own self-interest, and they're losing badly. And it's only when they all come together to work as a team that they can defeat the big bad. But it's done so well here. You know, there's the characters have real relationships with each other. So when, you know, when Ileana is using her soul sword to basically depossess Magma, you know, then Cannonball sees that and he thinks, oh,
she's killing her.
She's killing her. She's attacking her. So obviously he attacks her. You know, so it's done for reasons. It's not just we don't get along because we're, you know, snotty kids or something. Right. There's
and Wolfsbane has very strong religious convictions. And so she and Ileana are continually at odds anyway.
Yeah, because she's seen as a demon.
Right.
Yeah. So these are
there's a lack of trust. The team still has a lack of trust with each other.
Right. But that's what makes the story work, is because they're fully rounded, you know, very fleshed out characters and not just caricatures thrown into this situation.
They could easily be caricatures. They technically are caricatures in creation. But Claremont does not write them as the caricatures that they could be.
Yeah, he writes them as people and unique, different people, which I find impressive. There's a lot of writers out there who take a team and they basically all have the same voice.
did something catch in your throat?
Oh yeah, I had a little sneeze there. But you know what I mean. There's you know, a very diverse team, but they all seem to be speaking with the same voice.
And that is not the case.
No, that is not the case here, which, you know, to Claremont's credit.
I think it should also be noted that this issue also is when we start seeing Ileana's armor.
Yes, we first start seeing her. Is it soul armor? It's her armor. Her, all right, I'm cutting this part out. But okay, explain to me in as few words as possible, what is Cannonball's power? I mean, I know he's nigh invulnerable when he blasts him, but
that's his power. He blasts.
but what is it exactly? He can shoot off really fast.
Well, that happens to most of us in our lives, but we're usually very vulnerable afterwards.
Thank you very much, everybody. We'll be done for the night. So anyway,
I think you should leave that in, but
I did not see that coming, Brian.
Oh.
Hey-o.
What is, okay, I'm looking it up, actually. Okay. We can cut out any part of this, but
yeah, this one's going to be a bear, a demon bear to edit.
He uses the ability to fly at jet speeds while encased in an impenetrable force field.
You know, like you do.
As one does.
He's not invulnerable when he blasted.
that's all I got on the Wikipedia. Now there may be something better.
Anyway, I like the character of Sam Guthrie. I think he's clever and cute, and he's got a sense of naivete that's a lot of fun. But his powers just make me scratch my head.
Shall we get back on point?
Let's get back on point. You know, I guess it should be pointed out that also within these stories, there is, as is typical with New Mutants and X-Men at this time, massive cutaways to things unrelated to the story that will only become clear to us several issues down the line. Chris Claremont did this all the time in his writing. So we get cutaways to the Starjammers.
Yes.
Which is just a lot of fun. You know.
But just a very brief cameo.
The Starjammers are, how would you describe them? Just spacefaring pirates.
They are. They're space pirates.
They're space pirates.
But they're good space pirates.
They're awesome space pirates with fantastic mustaches. And then we also get this strange entity sort of blasting through space, which we find out what it is in the last issue of the arc, Slumber Party. It turns out to be Warlock. Warlock is a techno-organic life form.
Who is fleeing his father.
Who is fleeing his father.
Throughout the vast reaches of space, hurtling towards Earth.
Yeah. So he's a machine. So he thinks when he gets to Earth, he thinks all the organic life forms are food, and he thinks the machines are, because he's only ever known what he is. So there's a wonderful little scene where he's trying to make friends with a refrigerator and trying to say, you know, it's very clever how you keep all your stuff fresh inside of you.
And of course, in a surprising moment with Warlock, there is a wacky misunderstanding between the New Mutants and Warlock that leads to a fight.
Yes. They punch for a while, then they become friends.
Never saw that coming.
But it's nice. The reason this fits in so well is because there is so much horror and, you know, sadness in the Demon Bear saga, the Demon Bear arc. This really lets you know who these, and like I said in the beginning, they're kids. It lets them be kids for a while. And of course, you know, it's a superhero soap opera, so something has to happen to, some kind of conflict has to happen that right. Usually involves punching things. But there's so many little character moments about, is it Ileana who gets the new makeup?
No, it's Ronnie.
It's Ronnie, yeah.
Or Rain, Ronnie. Rain. I always called her Ronnie. You called her Rain.
It is. It's Rain Sinclair is her name.
Okay, it is Rain Sinclair. I don't know. The Scots.
Yeah, so there's little character moments. And then, of course, there's Sam Guthrie, who doesn't recognize her and
gets punched. Because again, punching.
Yeah, so it's really, really nice.
Well, and they, of course, inviting in the some of the girls from the town,
right,
to the slumber party, and of course, wackiness ensues there.
It's just
including a Lockheed hat.
Yeah. Oh, and then you also have to have the, you know, because there is a, you know, they have a dragon, like you do. So there's always the, you know, the Three's Company type of thing where they have to hide the dragon. So
final thoughts, Paul.
You know, I think New Mutants as a whole has never been one of my favorite titles. But this arc, this story, it is a truly amazing bit of work. I mean, you have to be able, it can't be expressed strongly enough how influential this is with the art and the storytelling. So many people have cited this as influence on their work today. It's really quite an amazing achievement.
I agree. And again, it's as The comic that introduced to a larger audience, Bill Sienkiewicz, it will always have, I think, a special place in many folks' hearts as well.
Absolutely. Well said. Okay, so next time, Brian,
we're finally doing it.
We are. We're going to break format again. We're going to do a comic that when we decided to do this podcast way back, you know, a year ago, we talked about should we do this, and it's been a huge debate with us.
We kind of decided not to at some point. We felt like this comic had been covered ad nauseum.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it's covered so much. I mean, it's you know, I was a little concerned we're not going to be able to do justice to it.
And, you know, the question is, could we add anything new?
Exactly.
But I think we've come up with some ideas that might be new with this particular very seminal, very important comic book.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's I can't think of anyone who doesn't look at this comic and say that they've been influenced by it in some way.
Right. People have strong feelings about this comic.
It's true. And we're going to do our best to cover it next time. But we're going to keep it as a very special, very special episode, so we'll announce what the title is when the episode is released.
It's a good bet many you will guess beforehand, but...
It's one of those classics that, you know, everyone talks about. So yeah. Probably everyone knows what it is in their mind, but we're going to play coy. Yes. Okay, so until next time, the very special episode
of Collected Edition.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. As always, we value your opinions and your feedback, so leave a comment on individual episodes at collectededitionpodcast.com. Send us an email at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com. And if you could leave us a review on iTunes, it really does help us get found. So until next time, keep reading comics.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. The show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, as well as online at collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes. You can also send us feedback at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or on Twitter at the Daddy Elk Productions handle @DaddyElk and use the #CollectedEdition. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Nobody's going to keep him down.
There you go.
He drinks a whiskey drink. He drinks a lager drink. He drinks a cider drink. He drinks some other kind of drink. I'm not even sure if I got those right.
Oh, man. Outtakes galore on this one.